thank you for inviting me. I obviously know this seminar series, which is becoming quite famous and legendary. So I'm very happy to give this seminar. So thank you for inviting me. Before I start, since there's not many venues where one can do this, I wanted to basically give a 30-second appeal, because everybody is donating to refugees, but countries' populations grow by 3% in like a couple of weeks because of the refugee crisis. And of course, one must address the cause of the refugee crisis. So if you want to do that, here's some suggestions not given by us, by the people that need it. So the work that I wanted to do now, that I wanted to talk about, is some recent work that basically links the twisted bilayer graphene problem to a topological heavy fermion problem. And then if I have time, I wanted to go to the physics of twisted bilayer graphene in large magnetic fields. Most of this work has been done by Jida Song, and the second part by Jonah, Aaron, and Fang. And of course, actually, there's many collaborations that we've had with the senior people in the second row. Now, I'm not going to go through much introduction because I want to get to the meat of the problem, but the physics that I'm going to be talking about today has to do with taking two stacks of single layer graphene, twisting them by a small amount, and then getting to some angle, which is called magic angle, which is basically an angle that has a value of around 1 degree. And then at this magic angle, having a set of bands that show up that become flat. And these set of bands can accommodate from eight electrons. So going from filling -4 to filling 4, 8 electrons in between them. Now, in single band theory, this would be a metal at any filling between these two, between -4 and 4, because of the symmetry properties of the two layers. But it turns out that in effect, what you get is a set of correlated insulators at integer filling, which are many body insulators, kind of pierced by superconducting domes. Now, there's many, of course, the physics of this system is very, very rich. There's many phases around. And these are just some of the phases that you can find in the system, and some very incomplete list of the experiments that exist to date. But of course, besides the correlated insulator states, you actually find that some of these insulators are churn insulators. Some of these superconductors are thought to be nodal, etc. So there's a richness of experiments and of phases of matter in the system. Now, in this richness, there's a dichotomy that basically the contradiction that stands out, and the contradiction comes from the fact that there are basically two types of experiments. There's experiments such as STM, which see Coulomb blockade basically behavior in these systems, and they can basically give you a large on-site repulsion. They suggest a large on-site repulsion, large Coulomb repulsion in what's sort of seems like quantum dot physics. In fact, in the early papers in Yazdani's group, Biao Lian and others model these experiments by using quantum dot pictures, actually, without any large hopping in between the sites where the quantum dots are, and these sites of the quantum dots are where the quantum dots are at the AA spots of the twisted Moir lattice, which we'll go into afterwards. Then, of course, there's other experiments which suggest loosely coupled local entropy of what is disappearing on the magnetic field experiments. But of course, there's also many experiments that suggest delocalized electron states. So there's experiments which clearly show superconductivity. There's Landau-Fan experiments. Then there's some experiments which suggest Dirac behavior. So there's all this completely contradictory picture. And this contradictory picture, if you are to take it at face value, then you would say that a phenomenological model should actually consist of both local moments and itinerant electrons. Now, we're not going to build a phenomenological model. We're going to actually build an analytic model. But if you were to take this without building a phenomenological model or without being able to build an analytic model, what you'd say is that the experiments really tell you that you have both local moments and itinerant electrons. Now, of course, the flatness of the band would basically lead to localization. Flat bands, especially atomic flat bands, lead to localization. But in order to get the delocalized wave function, one simple way of getting delocalized wave function is to get topology. And if you're to look at these experiments and think, you know, in retrospect, how should I put them together? Well, it would be kind of a heavy fermion physics type of model that actually also has some delocalized wave function, some topology in it. So now what I want to show you is that there's an actual exact mapping, analytic mapping, between twisted bilayer graphing and the heavy fermion model that doesn't have to go through any phenomenological assumptions, and that's derived fully from the Bissitsa-McDonald model. And in this case, all parameters are calculated in a first principle way, first numerically, but now we actually know how to calculate them also analytically. And a lot of the numerical results that were obtained in previous strong coupling expansions that didn't have a deep understanding or a simple understanding can now be simply understood. And this model also gives you insights in the new physics. Now, I'll start with the first part of the talk, which is the construction of this model. And then I'll show you how this model gives you a new understanding of correlated states and can explain, for example, things that in the strong coupling expansion were seen, but did not have a fundamental intuitive understanding. So in order to building the heavy fermion model, we have to ask what are the symmetries or what's the model of two layers of graphene. This is two twisted layers at a small angle. Okay, this is larger than one angle. This angle is larger than 1 degree, but still small. And in this model here, we call these regions AA. Well, you'll see basically that the A of the lower, the A sublattice of the lower sheet is on top of the A sublattice of the upper sheet. And these regions, AB, where vice versa happens. So these are macro regions in the Moiré unit cell. Now, you can do a symmetry analysis of this model and find all the crystalline symmetries of this system. And these are the crystalline symmetries, for example, of the famous Bissitsa-McDonald model, which is the model that was initially suggested in, you know, years and years ago to describe the physics of twisted bilayer graphene, and which predicts these magic angles at which the bands turn out to be flat. Now, this model has the following symmetries. It has some magnetic symmetries, such as C2Z times time reversal, C3Z, 120 degree rotation, C2X, valley U1, and time reversal. Now, the valley here is a quantum number that appears because the physics is governed of this model by having two Dirac nodes of the upper and lower layer around the K point, and then coupling them, one from the upper layer, one from the lower layer, coupling them, you do a bunch of analytics and you find out that this coupling can actually give you flat bands, but at K prime, at the other K point of the lower and upper layer, you have a similar situation related to the one at K by time reversal, but these two, the physics in these two valleys at single particle level decouple, in the sense that in order to actually obtain hybridization terms between one valley and the other, I need to basically tile this Brillouin zone all the way from the small Moiré Brillouin zone all the way from K to K prime, and that's a suppressed process. Okay, so now that we know the symmetries, what we can do is look at the flat bands, diagonalize this model. This is, by the way, a continuum model. So it's an infinite, it's got infinite number of shells of plane waves. Of course, analytically, you truncate it at some point and put in a computer. And if you do this, you find these flat bands, which per value per spin, you know, go from -1 to 1 times, as I said, value and spin 4. So there's -4 to 4. But what you find is that when you solve the band structure, these flat bands, their eigenvalues under these symmetries can be easily found at high symmetry points. And not only that they can be found, but are fixed by the symmetries of the system. In other words, if you consider a system with these symmetries, the flat bands have to have these eigenvalues. There's no other way around. And these are some eigenvalues under the symmetry group. For example, this is a two-dimensional representation at the K point. These are two one-dimensional representations at the gamma point, which differ by their eigenvalue under C2x, and the same thing at the M point. Okay? And then when you have these eigenvalues, what you can do is you can ask, are the bands that have these eigenvalues, can they be formed by local orbitals? And if they could be formed by local orbitals, you could immediately write down a Vanier description or a heavy fermion description and see how localized the bands are. But now starts the first complication, that you find that there is no way that these bands can be written as a sum or as local orbitals. Hence, they cannot be written as exponentially localized Vanier states. They are not, they cannot never be written as an atomic limit. Hence, they have to be topological. And how do you do this? Well, we know in every symmetry group on the Bilbao crystallographic server, which can be accessed online, we know we have tabulated the eigenvalues at high symmetry points of all the local atomic orbitals. So any band formed out of atomic orbitals, out of localized orbitals, or any sum of bands formed by localized orbitals has to have a sum of these eigenvalues tabulated in the Bilbao crystallographic server. You plug in these eigenvalues and you see that there's no way to write them down in terms of atomic limits. And hence that means that these two bands can never have just per value per spin. They can never have a local a description. So hence there's an obstruction to two band symmetric and local lattice models. And these obstructions have been in the literature for a long time. This particular way of understanding it is the way we understood it, but there's other papers that understand it also cited here and here, okay? So these two bands, they cannot be written down as localized orbitals, hence they're topological. But what kind of topology do they have? And this actually turned out to be a contentious subject for 3 or 4 years. It was first thought that these bands have fragile topology, but now it's known that this is not true, that these bands actually have a stable topology. And this is very interesting because of the following fact. The Bicester-McDonald model per valley per spin is a continuum model. So there is nothing that can tell that says that given any number of bands, you should at some point, taking more and more bands into account, you should get to a trivial state. In a lattice model, that's obviously true. If I take all the orbitals, all the bands of all the orbitals up to the bandwidth, I have to get to a trivial state. But here I don't. So what turns out to be the case is that if you also employ a symmetry, which is particle Hall, which is an emergent symmetry of the Bicester-McDonald model of twisted bilayer graphene, then this, with this symmetry, which is better or as good as neglecting spin orbit coupling, it's not exact, but it's as good as neglecting spin orbit coupling in these systems. And neglecting spin orbit coupling, everybody does it, and it's, you know, it's good to better than 0.3% in these systems. So that's how good particle Hall is in the Bicester-McDonald model. Okay, so if you employ this symmetry, then what you find out is that no matter how many bands you take around to charge neutrality point, these bands are all topological. So for example, here we take not just the two flat bands that look here, but we take not just these two flat bands here, but we take 10 bands, okay? and we look at the Wilson loop or Berry phase. And what we see that the Wilson loop in one direction, the eigenvalues of the Wilson loop in one direction plotted as a function of momentum in the other direction, wind around. Because they wind around, you can never make them be constant. The eigenvalues of the Wilson loop are the Vanya centers. Hence, you can never localize these Vanya centers. Hence, this model is topological at any number of bands that you take around charge neutrality. Now, you can further prove the following statement, that this topology, okay, is equivalent to having 4n plus 2 Dirac points at zero energy. So this strong topology, which is taking any amount of bands in the Bister-McDonald model, the Wilson loop points, you can never write them down as an atomic limit, is equivalent to having 4n plus 2, so from now we'll say 2, Dirac points at zero energy. And of course, this, what we call it is, you know, we call it a symmetry anomaly. And again, it forbids the same way that we said in the previous slide, it forbids the symmetric and short range models with any finite number of bands. Okay. Now there are local models that have been built in the literature. There's two band models where C2Z times T is implemented non-locally. You can do this. And there's 10 band models where particle hole symmetry actually is not respected, not that it's not local, but it's not respected. Okay, so if you break C2ZT or represented non locally or break particle hole, you can build local models. But if you want to keep all the symmetries, you cannot. And this strong topology is related to having these two Dirac nodes of these bands close to the, at zero energy. Okay, so having understood the topology, now we start with the construction of the Hedy fermion model. So now we first ask, where do the bands that create this pattern, for example, in STM, these localized, you can clearly see it in the STM images, these kind of localized charge blobs at the AA sublattice, where do these states come from? And what you find is that we know, is that first of all, as we said, we know that these two flat bands here cannot give you these states because they cannot give you localized atomic orbitals. But then you look to the next set of bands, which are, you know, 20 or 30 mil electron volts further away from the flat bands. You look at these set of bands and you ask, what representations do they have under the symmetry group? And you find out that they have a representation, which is gamma 3, which is a two-dimensional representation. Now, this two-dimensional representation, actually, it turns out that if you replace these two eigenvalues, gamma one and gamma two of the flat bands by a gamma three eigenvalue, okay, then these bands, the flat bands having eigenvalue K2, K3, M1, M2, and gamma three are now an atomic limit, okay? So the only thing one needs to obtain something that can be equivalent to an atomic limit is to borrow one of these gamma three eigenvalues here and merge into the flat band. Because these bands are kind of close, we're now going to say, what happens if you have actually a six band model made out of just these localized, these flat delocalized topological bands, but also these a small, you know, region in K space around the gamma point here, which allows me to borrow one of these gamma three representations. And if you do this, you'll see that the band formed by a gamma three representation at the gamma point, by a K2, K3 representation at the K point, and by a M1 plus M2 representation at the M point is equivalent to a PX plus IPY and PX minus IPI set of localized orbitals at the AA site. So now you say, maybe I can build these trial Vanya states and ask what they give you. And indeed, what you build, we build this trial Vanya states, and then we computed the overlap of the trial Vanya states with the six closest bands to, you know, these to the charge neutrality, to these bands. We plug them into the Vanya 90 program. Okay, and then we saw that you can build very localized, extremely localized Vanya states. How localized? Well, the spread of the Vanya states is 0.2 the Moiré lattice. okay? And it sits on the AA site. The hopping between nearest neighbors Banach states is 0.1 milli electron volts. So this is very, very, very weak hopping. So these are basically local orbitals, local PX plus IPY orbitals, which we're now gonna call them F orbitals, basically borrowing from heavy fermion physics. Second thing that you ask is, well, how many of these flat bands, low flat bands, of these two lowest flat bands are contributed by the Vanier states? We know that you cannot have 100% of them being contributed because the flat bands are topological. These Vanier states are localized, hence by definition, not topological. So we know that it cannot be 100%, but we can compute how much. And it turns out that a staggering 96% of these flat bands are contributed by these Vanier states. Now, at the beginning, these spread and localization of the Vanier orbitals were obtained numerically, but now we know in unpublished results how to relate the spread of the Vanier states to the coefficients of the Bissenstrom-McDonald model, for example. And there are simple expressions that look like this. So this is the spread of the Vanier state, and these are some coefficients of the Bissenstrom-McDonald model, and we know how to relate them analytically. Okay, so we now know that 96% of the Bissenstrom-McDonald bands, or of the flat bands, are given by localized orbitals at the A and at the AA sites of the Moiré lattice. But of course, we also know that these flat bands are topological, and hence there's a 4% remaining states of these flat bands that's not given by the localized orbitals. Where are they? Well, of course, they're around the gamma point, because around the gamma point is the only place where what we did is to borrow the gamma three representation and replace the actual representations of the flat bands, which are gamma one, gamma two, by the gamma three representation. So that's where we know that the Vanier orbitals have zero overlap with the Vanier orbitals that we built have zero overlap with the Bissenstrom-McDonald bands. They have different presentations. And hence, we know that that's where the 4% states that are not matched by the Vanier states rest. Okay? So now we have to find a model for these states. And the way we find a model for these states is we take the projector into these six bands. We subtract the projector into the Vanier states, okay, from these six bands. And this gives you, so the six bands have gamma three representation plus another gamma three representation, okay, plus a gamma one, gamma two, right? That's the six bands of the Bissenstrom-McDonald model at the gamma point. Now you subtract, gamma two here, you subtract the gamma three representation, which are the Vanier orbitals, you're left with a projector that has the following representations, gamma three and gamma one plus gamma two. Okay. And then you can now, you know, take the eigenstates of this projector and dot the Bissenstrom-McDonald Hamiltonian into these eigenstates. There's four of them. Gamma three is a two-dimensional representation, gamma one and gamma two. And you get a 4x4 model. This is the 4x4 model that you get. By symmetry, it also works out in this way. And this will be our conduction electrons, okay? This would be our delocalized electrons. Now, there's a lot of physics in this that I'm gonna unpack right now. This model by symmetry, you know, the gamma three, which is an angular momentum plus one, couples to the gamma one, gamma two, which is angular momentum zero by a linear term. And then there's a splitting of the gamma one plus gamma two representations, which is given by M. All of these can be obtained from the Bissenstrom-McDonald Hamiltonian. They're given here, okay? The values are given here. And now we know how to obtain them, and also not just numerically, but analytically. I don't give their expressions here. But what do this 4x4 model actually gives you? Well, you can plot its dispersion. And what you can find is that this dispersion is a quadratic point here, which is the gamma three representation here, okay? And a gamma one, gamma two representation here, which is split by two times, where M is this 3.7 electron volts. And You now remember that we mentioned that the topology of the Bister-McDonald bands comes from having two Dirac nodes at zero energy. These two Dirac nodes, in fact, are nothing else but this double vortex. Okay, so this is where the topology has now been transmuted to. The topology of the Bister-McDonald model has been transmuted into having a double vortex at the gamma point, which in just the model for these conduction bands, for these four states, this is a gamma three representation, it's a two-dimensional representation. You cannot break it unless you break the symmetry of the model. The M here, this value, is actually just the splitting between the gamma one and gamma two bands, and it actually will serve to be the bandwidth of the Bister-McDonald model. So now we have a kind of a picture of where the conduction electrons come from. The conduction electrons come from this band structure. And if you look carefully at this band structure, this is an AB untwisted bilayer band structure. So it's an AB Bernal stacked band structure. And this is the famous double vortex of the untwisted AB Bernal graphene. Okay? And this is what carries the topology. The quadratic touching here is equivalent to two Dirac points. Okay, so now we have the heavy fermions, we have the conduction electrons, but we still need to get the coupling between them. Okay, so the physics of the system is some heavy F fermions at the AA. Around the AB is some AB unstacked graphene dispersion of the electrons, of the conduction electrons, the C electrons. But of course, now we need the hybridization between the C and the F electrons. And the hybridization between the C and the F electrons has a very simple form. It's actually a constant which gives you the hybridization between the gamma three representation of the F electrons and the gamma three representation of the C electrons. And there's a small linear term, which is actually allowed by symmetry for reasons that I can't go into, but we can even neglect it in first approximation. And it's just a constant between these two representations, gamma three of the F electrons and gamma three of the C electrons, which is this is the gamma three of the C electrons. The F electrons are just flat. And now you reach to the full model, the full heavy fermion model, which is no longer a large plane wave model of many plane waves like the Bister-McDonald model is, but it's a 6x6 model. And this 6x6 model contains the 6x6 model contains the 4x4 AB unstacked conduction electrons, the 2x2 F electrons, this is per value per spin, of course, the 2x2 F electron model, which is just zero because the F electrons are very localized, and the coupling term, you can just think gamma, you can just think of it as a constant. You can even neglect this. As I said, this is this coefficient is much smaller. In to first order, you can neglect it. So this is a 6x6 model. And you can ask, well, how well does it approximate the Bister-McDonald model? Well, this is how well. The black lines are just this model. Okay, and the red dots are the Bister-McDonald model. So it approximates it, you know, almost perfectly in the energy range that we are interested in. Okay, and as physical meaning of these coefficients, this coefficient M here, which is just this, the difference between the gamma one and gamma two representations, this is 2M, is turns out to be just the bandwidth of the Bister-McDonald model. Okay, now this gamma, which is the hybridization between the gamma three representations of the heavy fermions and the gamma three representation of the conduction electron actually, right, splits the gamma three representation. So splits this gamma three, which is here, from this gamma three, which is here. And hence this gamma just gives you the gap between the flat bands of the Bister-McDonald model or the flattish bands of the Bister-McDonald model and the next band, the what used to be called passive bands of the Bister-McDonald model. And these are the values. Gamma is by now the largest energy scale in the problem. It's around 24, 20 milli electron volts. the bandwidth of the Bister McDonald model is around 2M, so 8 millielectron volts, starting from here. So now you have a model that's 6x6, that's heavy fermion coupled to conduction electrons, and that gives you an incredibly faithful representation of the Bister McDonald model while having separated the local and non-delocalized physics in two sets of electrons. So now you can take this model and do interactions. But before I go to the interacting part, I wanted to see if there's any questions now that I finished the single body derivation of the heavy fermion model. If there's no questions, maybe I can just go further. Okay, so with these degrees of freedom, with the conduction electrons and the F electrons, now you can ask what's the interacting model and what phase of matter will I get with the interacting model. And what you do is, of course, you just project the Coulomb interaction into the heavy fermion and conduction bands, and you get four terms that are important. And these terms are the following. There's actually 16 terms, but some of them are very small. There's only four that are very important. And the most important one is the density-density interaction for F electrons. And this is the onside repulsion of the F electrons, the Hubbard U, and it'll be the largest energy scale in the problem. We find there's a next important thing is a density-density interaction for the C electrons, a density-density between the F and C electrons, and what will give you the third numbers of the correlated states is there's an exchange interaction between the F and C electrons. So let's see how these things look. Okay, so this is how the Hamiltonian looks. This is the FF Hubbard U interaction on the AA sublattice, on the A lattice. And this term is by far now the largest energy scale in the problem. If you take the values in the Bister McDonald model with some screening length, you get to around 50 something millielectron volts. Now in real experiments, it's around 30, 35, but you can also play with the screening length, et cetera, and get different values. Now, so this is the largest energy scale in the problem. Then there's a density interaction between the F and C electrons, which will actually later serve as a chemical potential for the C electrons. And this is the next energy in the problem, 44. You can notice that they're sort of similar, and there's a reason for this. This system is actually, 20% away from an incredibly highly symmetric point, even more symmetry than was found before. Okay, and then there's a ferromagnetic coupling between what are U4 moments, which I'll get to later, of the F and C electrons. And this is this term. And this is a smaller energy scale, but it's still quite large and it will be very important. So this is the four, three-term interaction model. We will neglect this for now. Three-term interaction model with the interactions that are the more important. So now let's take this model and see how we can understand the correlated states. And the fundamental thing now is that we know where the Hubbard U acts. It acts on the heavy fermions, on this F heavy fermions, and we know what it will do. So with this, we can start understanding the correlated states and show you that it gives you these give you the same results as in strong coupling, in other strong coupling pictures, but with now an extra bonus of understanding some of the things that weren't understood in those strong coupling pictures. So there were previous studies about the strongly interacting correlated states in twisted bilayer graphene. And these are the previous studies, and there's not all of them, but this is a small part of the previous studies. So it was shown that the two band per valley per spin projected Bister McDonald Hamiltonians, if you just take the two bands and project into them, has a high symmetry. And there's several symmetries in different parts of the coefficient space. There's a chiral U4, there's a flat U4, and there's a combination of them depending on which range of the parameters you are. Now, I want to point out, I'm not going to go into it because it's not very relevant, but I want to point out that the exact same symmetries can be obtained now in our heavy fermion model, but with the extra bonus that you don't need to project anymore. So these are symmetries in the heavy fermion model that commute with both the interacting Hamiltonian and with the kinetic Hamiltonian, as opposed to the previous strong coupling studies where the symmetries were commuting only with the interaction Hamiltonian. Now, for example, I can give you an example of one of these symmetries. There's some, this is a range of the parameter where the mass, which is 3.7 electron volts, you take it to be zero, and then you have what we call a flat Q4 rotation symmetry, which are these matrices, okay? And you don't need to remember it, but in this, with this symmetry, this exchange term becomes very nice to write down because it's just a U4 spin of the F electrons times U4 spin of the C electrons with a ferromagnetic coupling. So that's why we call it basically a ferromagnetic term. It's just some U4 ferromagnetic term, okay? So now having this machinery, what can we say again about the correlated states? And let's see again what the previous studies said. The previous studies gave actually a set of ground states at integer fillings. And these sets of ground states at integer fillings were basically quantum Hall ferromagnets. And these, or Chern ferromagnets, so basically states that at some fillings have Chern numbers at filling, you know, 3 and 1, or +/-3 and +/-1, they had Chern numbers at filling 0 and 2. The strong coupling had states which had zero Chern numbers of ground states, but were close in energy with two states that had non-zero Chern number, which could be stabilized by magnetic field. And what happens is that basically, I don't need to go into details, but you basically ferromagnetically polarize different spin flavor and band indices of these Bisset and McDonald bands. Or you can polarize, ferromagnetize some combination. These are the coherent intervalley states, which are basically combinations between different valleys, and then ferromagnetically occupy those combinations. Okay. So there's many ways of understanding these correlated states at integer filling, but the basic idea is that what you have is a filling of spin valley band polarized or some coherence states in this spin valley band space. Now, what's interesting is that in this strong coupling previous studies, which were started by Kang and Buffett early on, what you have is that even though you've projected into the flat bands of the Bisset-McDonald model and solved the Coulomb-Hamiltonian there, since the ground states can be at integer filling can be obtained exactly, and they're actually just ferromagnetic, Slater determinants, the charge spectrum can also be obtained exactly, the charge one spectrum. And this is how the charge spectrum looks, okay? And this is the charge spectrum on top of the correlated insulator many-body states that came from projecting the Coulomb interaction into the flat bands of the Bisset-McDonald model. Now, as you can see, in these previous strong coupling studies, the charge one spectrum had large dispersion, actually. So even though you started with a flat band, you now, after adding Coulomb, going to the correlated state, finding the spectrum, the charge spectrum on top of the correlated states, you start getting a large dispersion. So there were many questions. First of all, where does this large dispersion come from? Why is the minimum of this large dispersion at gamma? Why is it so flat around the zone boundary? You can see that the zone boundary is much, much flatter here, right? discharge spectrum. And then if you're not at if you're, you know, at filling one, for example, what you would find is that the electron spectrum on top of a correlated state at filling one would have large bandwidth, but the whole spectrum, which is the blue here, on top of the state at filling one, had very low bandwidth. So there are all these questions about, well, these are just part of the question that could not be answered that I now claim can be answered very easily and intuitively in this heavy fermion picture. So in this heavy fermion picture, what we now claim is that there are Hund's-like rules, which basically are as simple as a few body problem that will give you the bandwidth, the gaps, and you know, the reason why on top of the filling one correlated insulator, you know, the electron band is much more dispersive than the whole band, et cetera. So all these things that could not have been explained. So how do we explain it? How do we explain them? Well, there's a very easy way of explaining the correlated states in the heavy fermion picture. And this easy way of explaining the correlated states in the heavy fermion picture is that you start, that your initial state is actually a polarized state of the F fermions. So only the F fermions, the heavy fermions, polarize, and the C electrons are half filled, okay? And then this is your parent state. And you start from this parent state, and now you do Hartree-Fock. And this can actually be done analytically, as I'll show you. So for example, at filling zero, the trial state is given here, where these F are the F electrons at position R, the sum over all positions of the plus is the valley, plus minus, the spin is obvious, and the one and two are the one and two, there's two heavy fermions per valley per spin, Px minus plus Ipy or Px minus Ipy, okay? And you find out that there's a Hund's rule, a U4 Hund's rule, which basically tells you that the highest, the U4 indices that are mostly symmetric under exchange are favored, okay? And we confirm this in numerics and analytically. And then at the U4 symmetric point, okay, you can rotate this state into many other states. For example, you can rotate into a KVC state by U4 rotation. Now, away from this U4 symmetric point, this one of these states will win. And the beauty of this heavy fermion is you immediately see which one of these states will win. Okay, so let me give you the results. So what we do is starting with this set of parent states, which are just F electron polarized. You then do one shot Hartree-Fock, meaning you take the state, which is polarized F electrons times Fermi surface of the C electrons. And now you run it through the Hamiltonian, which contains FC hybridization, interactions, FF interactions, FC interaction, etc. And you find out that the one-shot Hartree-Fock is actually very close to the self-consistent Hartree-Fock. But the one-shot Hartree-Fock can be solved analytically. And you can see it here, the difference between one-shot Hartree-Fock and self-consistent Hartree-Fock. Okay, so because it can be solved analytically, you now have an understanding of the charge dispersion, for example. So what we had before in the heavy fermion model is a set of C electrons. I'm not drawing how many of them, set of C electrons and the F electrons, which were flat and at zero energy. But now Hubbard U moves these F electrons, okay, at plus U, minus U here. Okay, and this moves these F electrons into the conduction electrons. And now there's hybridization here, small hybridization. So in the end, you reach, after one shot Hartree-Fock, you reach a band dispersion that looks like this. Okay? Now you can remember from the strong coupling limit how the band dispersion looked. The band dispersion, the strong coupling limit indeed looked, this is given here in the strong coupling limit, looks like it had a dip at gamma point plus a lot of flatness at the end of the Brian, at the boundary of Brian zone. So now we understand this flatness. This is the flatness of the heavy fermions that have been polarized by the Hubbard U. And we understand the dip of the dispersion at the gamma point, it's actually just the C electrons which had a dip at the gamma point. So all these strong coupling features of the bands of the excitation states can now be understood. Now, next, you can do even more analytic, and you can find a simple rule for which states, you know, the fully invalid polarized, the KVC state, etc., all these states in this U4 manifold of states will be favored once you go away from the U4 manifold. So U4 manifold is the manifold when M equals to zero, has some U4 rotation. But when M is not zero, all you need to do is realize that what governs the energetics of the states is just this block, which is the block in the gamma one, gamma two representation of the heavy fermion matrix, where this O here is the order parameter of the F electrons. So this is the parent state. You started with a parent state polarized in F electrons. It has some order parameters, the F electrons. And this order parameter couples through the J, through the ferromagnetic coupling, with the C electrons, and it creates this very simple term, okay? So now, whether you minimize this term or maximize it gives you, well, the maximum of this term gives you the maximum gap at the gamma point, and it gives you which states are favored. And you can immediately see why the KVC state actually turns out to be favored, because this term, the second term, anti-commutes with the first term. And then it will open a larger gap and will become stable. So these type of very simple rules, which we have written down, there are actually only two rules, can give you an understanding of the states that come out of strong coupling interested bilayer graphing model. There's one, there's a Hund rule, which you can use to find the parent states to polarize the F electrons. Then you can ask, once you've done this, you can ask which one of the U4 manifold of states is actually favored once I go away from the U4 manifold to the experimental situation, which is not fully U4 symmetric. And then you just have to maximize the gap of the C electrons at the gamma point, which comes out of maximizing this term. So one of the last things, you can also understand, remember that I was mentioning that at filling nu equals one, for example, you get that the electron band above the correlated state is much more dispersive than the whole band above the correlated state. And this you can understand also from this model easily because the term that couples the F electrons to the C electrons, okay, you remember that this had roughly the same value as U. And then when you go from filling zero to filling minus one, then this term acts as a chemical potential to the C electrons, which means that it shifts the C electrons relative to the F electrons. Okay. And once you shifted them, then you shifted the F electrons exactly very close to the dispersionless point of the C electrons. Then after you add interactions and hybridization, there's still not much level repulsion that can happen here just because of the virtue of how the bands are. And hence one of the bands is very, very flat, which is this guy. Okay. And the other one is very dispersive, which is this guy. Just to confuse you, I've plotted minus the spectrum here. Okay. So with that, I wanted to point out that, you know, you can explain the churn numbers of these states also very easily by just opening a gap in the quadratic heavy fermion, and which gap you open depends on the parent state, etc. But the churn numbers come naturally out of a, you know, double Dirac note opening argument, and I'll leave you with some insights into new physics, which we haven't really figured yet. But one of the things that could be, for example, explained by this model is the minimal coupling, is the weak coupling of the local moments in the order state. For example, at mu equals to 1, again, the fact that the F electrons couple very weakly to the C electrons here will give a natural weak coupling between the local moments and the C band. So a lot of these things, I think, will come out from the heavy Fermi model. But more importantly, I think at least this model will link two communities and will be able to use the machinery that the, you know, extraordinary machinery that many people in the heavy fermion community have developed to the study of these twisted bilayer systems and their richness of phases. So thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much for a very interesting talk. You're very impressive. So is there any questions from the audience? So I have a quick question. So what can we learn for a superconductivity from this picture? Now you have a kinetic energy, not just the interaction energy. So looks like you have whole machinery for figuring out
superconductivity. So that's the key question that we're trying to figure out now, but we haven't. So I can tell you two things. So if you're in just the fully projected, so the strong coupling, the fully projected models, right? So there's a strong coupling where you're just fully projecting to these models and you neglect the kinetic energy. If you do that, you get to these Hamiltonians that can be solved exactly at integer fillings. They cannot be solved away from integer fillings. But what you can prove is that the two-body spectrum doesn't have any bound states in the projected models, even though the Hamiltonians, so you can solve exactly for the ground state, not for at integer fillings, not for all of them. But for the ground states and for its two-body spectrum, which you can also solve exactly, you can show that it has no bound states. So there's no Kohn-Luttinger possibility of superconductivity without kinetic energy. Right, so Berry phases. So what these projective Hamiltonians have, you know, in strong coupling are just some Berry phases, right? Because you project and you get the band, you get the wave functions of the bands, and that's why the Hamiltonians don't commute. The terms in Hamiltonians don't commute. So they're non-trivial Hamiltonians, but you won't get superconductivity because you can prove exactly that there's no two-body bound state. There's some positive semi-definiteness argument that you can prove. So you need kinetic energy to get superconductivity, as you said. This heavy fermions model have it. Heavy fermions models have it. Unfortunately, we're still not entirely sure how to get superconductivity just because these Hubbard U's are so large here. So also we're not very familiar, or at least I'm not very familiar with the heavy fermion literature. So part of this is hopefully that people like yourself and others more familiar with this will have an idea on how to get superconductivity out of these models. But as you said, they should be there because heavy fermions have a lot of phases, including superconductivity. so certainly, I think it should be there. We don't know yet how to get it. We're working on it, but how to get it in a natural way. Yeah, because this is so far nothing that I've said is unnatural. It all came out of the Bister-McDonald model. It all came out, and you can even argue, even besides the Bister-McDonald model, I'll argue that this is even more generally true. This heavy fermion stuff. So, as the superconductivity, I firmly believe it should be there. I don't know how to get it yet, but we're working on it. But
yep,
it would be nice to get more ideas.
The next question is from Professor Kashiras.
Yes, hi. I'd like to mention that a key ingredient of the single particle model is to make sure that it gives the right behavior of the bands, not just at one angle, but at a range of angles, both above and below the magic value. And in fact, there is no such a thing as a magic angle. It's a range of angles at which all these interesting phenomena happen, a small range around a specific value. And in our earlier work, we had constructed models. In fact, the wave functions look very similar to what you were showing, where we pointed out that if you want to capture just the higher bands, the electron bands, you need at least five, or the lower bands, the whole bands, also at least five. And if you want to capture both sets, you need at least eight. So my question is, does your model capture this dependence on the band behavior on the angle around the magic value or not? And that's a key test for it.
Okay, so I have two. So the, I have very good questions. I have two explanations. Okay, so so I argue that this model, you know, has to be correct, first of all. Second of all, so why do I argue this? Well, first of all, we derive it, okay, from the Bissett-McDonnell model. Now, whether the Bissett-McDonnell model is, you know, describes where you need local, non-local terms, et cetera, as you very well know, it's a different story. But even with those, I would argue that it has to be correct. Here's the reason why. We all agree, right, that there's flat bands, right? So let's agree on two characteristics. Let's agree that there's flat bands, okay? And let's agree that there's some conduction bands, okay? And let's agree that these conduction bands minimum is at the gamma point, where we can agree on that, right? These are some very minimal ingredients. Now, what I argue is that since these bands are very flat, the flat bands will have to have some Vanier representation. When they're flat, when you go away from the magic angle, you get more contributions. And of course, you know, I don't claim that this is a good model, that this heavy fermion model is good at, you know, 1.5 angle 1.5 where the bands are not flat, because then, you know, you have dispersion, and this dispersion is actually just the overlap between the Vanier states. I can still describe it with some Vanier states, but it won't be low, the Vanier states will not be that localized. So we can you know, run what we did at a different angle, but you'll just have now the hopping between these two Vanier states, between these two F electrons, 0.1 milli electron volts. If you go to angle 1.5, it'll be much larger. So you won't gain anything from this model. Here, what you gain is that the F electrons are very localized at this angle, and you can separate the physics into these cells. Okay, but what I argue is that this separation of F electrons, C electrons, if the flat bands are flat, has to be there. Why? This is the smallest band gap. If you have the smallest band gap, then by virtue of, like, you know, crossings, all the Berry phase has to be localized very close to where the band gap is small. You're not going to have large Berry phase localized at, like, right, this is the end, this is like, whatever, 100, 200 electron volts or 100 electron volts. The Berry phase will not be localized here. All the Berry phase will be localized here. These will be regions of almost no Berry phase. So if you have almost no Berry phase, you're gonna have a localized description of these regions. So these are the F electrons. The Berry phase is localized here. Generically, these are gonna be the C electrons. So now we're just arguing how strongly coupled are the F electrons to the F electrons. Now we can do this Vanierization away from the magic angle. All it will lead to is a change in these numbers. And in fact, you know, I have a student that is doing this right now to get the you know, the full phase as what you just said. But I would expect that you'd get spread here, because, you know, if I go to angle 1.5, I get spread here. So I would say that this scale separation to F and C electrons is good as long as the bands are flat and the smallest gap is at the gamma point, because then I know that the bands are localized away from the gamma point. And because of, you know, level crossings, etc., where the gap is the smallest, there's the Berry phase is concentrated on gamma. And that's the case with the Bissett-McDonnell model. Now, of course, you know, you have a much more a much more precise understanding of the terms that come in. And I don't claim that, you know, this model will be able to take all the terms into account, but on general grounds, there has to be this separation between a heavy and a light electron. on these general grounds?
Well, the issue is actually that first, the range of values of theta at which the flatness starts breaking up is 0.1 degrees, not 0.5. So within 0.1 degrees, you see other interesting features. But the point is that if you don't include those, at least one more band, you lose what happens at these bands at the edges of the Brillouin zone. And this is important, as you were describing, the flatness of the bands, but also the behavior of the immediately next bands around the Brillouin zone edges. That's what's missing.
Well, but here's my point. So I hear you, but I'm not. So here's my point. If a band structure like this is true, where you have this gap being 3 times larger than this gap here, if we agree with this, then what we've done is correct, because we've taken these bands where it matters. But right, but a band that's 3 times, if this gap is as we see it 3 or 4 times larger than this gap, then I would say that it's okay to just take the bands here and at the edge of the Brillouin zone. In fact, when we do the numerics, we also take all the bands into account. Numerically, to obtain these values, take all the bands into account. But obviously, for the heavy fermion, for the analytic model, you just take the bands. For the analytic model, you just take a restricted Hilbert space, which is this plus this. So we don't take the restricted Hilbert. We don't take this just so we can write a model. But of course, you know, for the spreads, for computing the spread, you just, because these are numerical things, so you can just do them numerically. If you want to do analytics, you don't take these guys into account. But what I'm claiming is that, and I want to know if you agree with it, is that, you know, this gap seems to be much larger than this one.
Yes, right? that is so, indeed true.
So then it's okay to just take you know, up to some level here, not you know, certainly this one will not contribute, right, to anything that's flat here. How can it, right?
Yes, no, those are indeed true, but the extra band brings in interesting features that are necessary there to see what happens if you tweak the system a little bit away from the perfect angle. Anyways, I mean, you can
decide. I agree. I agree. Okay. So if you tweak the system away from, but it has to come by a change of these ratios, by a change of this ratio to this ratio, right? So I agree that if you tweak the system, you can balance this, you can lower the one at the edge boundary, and yes. So we're basically, what we need to obtain is these values for every angle, and we're doing that now.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Right. Thank you. So there was a, I thought Marcel had a question. Do you still have the question, Marcel?
Well, yeah, I had the question about superconductivity, but basically that was the same question that you already asked. So I lowered my hand, and I think it's an interesting question to ponder what this model would imply for superconductivity. But this is some future work. So yeah, I don't have a question really. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So, so we are, okay, so I don't see any immediate question here. So in that case, I'd like to thank Andre for a very exciting talk. Thank you so much for sharing all these results. Thank you
very much.
Thank you, Andre.
Thank you. Thanks, Ivan.